You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
And just like I predicted in my best-selling book, The Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, the Black Lives Matter Movement returned potentially to the White House if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris end up being the president and the vice president of the United States.
Well, sure. They are already demanding reciprocity because they say that they pushed Biden over the top with the black vote. I'm not sure that that's true because I think that President Trump actually got a good deal more black vote than he's ever gotten in the past, or that any Republican has gotten in the past. But there you have it. They want reciprocity, and they want to find out what Joe's going to do for Black Lives Matter.
Well, let's go back in history a little bit and go back to the Obama-Biden administration. And at that time, and Black Lives Matter was basically founded by three black female lesbians, and that's Patrice Cullors, Alicia Garza, and Opal Tomati. And Patrice Cullors, of the three, being the most out there, I guess, in the social media, had attracted the attention, and actually initially negatively, of Michelle Obama. And then, I think, because of the issue of color, Michelle and Barack Obama invited Black Lives Matter into the White House. And they began having discussions with Black Lives Matter during the latter part of the Obama administration. Further, and to that extent, if you remember, a guy that we haven't heard of very much during these elections, at least on the media, the Reverend Al Sharpton, who is I'm telling you straight up front, he's a black racist. He went into the White House and met with President Obama no less than 63 times, as documented in my book. And this is a person who is a provocateur. He doesn't really care very much about black people. He cares about making money. He was a person that had, still has problems with the IRS. I think he owes over $5 million. That had never been resolved. So the thing that bothers me about this is that these are the people that will be in the White House coming into the future, and how does that bode for the United States and law enforcement?
Well, obviously not well. It is Patrice Cullors who wants the meeting with Biden and wants to be a part of his transition team so that they can select people that would forward their agenda, and every American should be very concerned about that.
Well, again, going back, and this is one of the chapters in my book, and I hope our friends and followers will pick up a copy of The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. I go into an entire chapter about Operation Zero and what I call the 4Ds, which is their program, which has been very successful so far, surprisingly successful, to disengage, distance, defund, and dissolve law enforcement. And you see that happening throughout the United States. As a matter of fact, Linda, just this week, the Los Angeles Police Department, which is one of our larger police departments in the United States, is defunding over $110 million. They're going actually for $150 million defunding of the police department. And because of that, they're pulling officers out of critical details. So they are reducing the size of the gang unit. They're reducing the size of robbery homicide unit. And this is as a time where their homicides have gone up over last year. They're pulling officers out of desk duty on the weekends, and they're not even responding to non-injury hit and runs.
Well, and the prosecutors are not bothering to prosecute so many crimes anymore, thefts and drugs and even stolen vehicles. They're just not doing it. So it's a free rein for criminals, and the more we defund the police and the more that we have police retire en masse and we don't replace them, we're going to be in a world of hurt in this country, and 4 years is going to make a huge difference in what America looks like.
Well, you know, it's interesting you talk about the police retirements, because police retirements up throughout the United States in these major cities where they have these defunding movements and there is no resonance and aggression and violence towards police. Here's what happens, and you know this, when experienced police officers and detectives retire, they leave a significant void in experience.
Absolutely.
And training and experience. And so what happens as these people and people in command positions and medium managers, lieutenants, you know, captains retire, they have to fill the ranks with more supervisors. And so they pull those people from the lower ranks that don't have the education, training, and experience to lead or to solve crimes. And that's huge.
Well, and let's just take California, where Governor Gavin Newsom has issued pardons and commuted sentences for 35 current and former convicted felons, and also 10 pardons for immigrants facing deportation. This is a double whammy. We have it's a triple whammy. Police being defunded, police leaving the departments in droves, and governors and prosecutors letting people out of prisons and commuting sentences and stopping deportations. We're going into the wild, wild west in this administration. And now you have Black Lives Matter wanting to go into the White House and help determine policy.
And, you know, going back to the ripple effects of what has happened in the United States with Black Lives Matter and politicizing officer-involved shootings, officer-involved force events, which here is a huge series of false narratives, you know, out there about that, which was the basis of my book. But here's a great example. So I'm getting ready to go out to California to be the plenary speaker at the Southern California Use of Force Instructors Association. And what am I out there to discuss? I'm out there to discuss a new Senate Bill 230 that was created in California and passed by the legislature and signed over by Governor Newsom that is going to change the scope of use of force guidelines for police. And so I'm looking at the funding. Okay, so there's all this rhetoric, you know, coming out of the progressive left, reimagine, you know, law enforcement. Okay, and that's a huge Black Lives Matter issue. Reimagine law enforcement. Kamala Harris, reimagine law enforcement, and she's from California. Well, so California has, I think it's 78,500 peace officers, police officers, deputy sheriffs working out on the street. 78,000. Here's a scary thought for you, by the way. There are more members of the California Bar Association who are attorneys than there are peace officers in the state of California. But anyway, so you got the 78,500. So what are they going to fund the new training, the new reimagining of police officers with? $10 million. And I worked out the numbers on $10,000, and here's and $10 million, and here's what I found: basically $128 per officer for all this new training. Okay, this reimagining law enforcement with $128. Okay, what do you think? Where do you think that's going to go? And you know, because you're in business, that a lot of that money is going to go to administration, and it's not even going to see the training to the officers.
Well, and that endangers the officers and it endangers the citizens. So citizens in California really ought to be standing up, and in other places like Minnesota and wherever they're defunding police, New York, another one. Because if we don't have law enforcement, you have chaos, and you have people like these Black Lives Matter people, the Antifa people coming in and taking over. You have criminals running rampant like you do in Minnesota, and now you have in Florida Governor DeSantis wanting to put together something that allows the public to use their firearms to shoot people, say, engaged in looting.
Right, from within 500 feet of a a riot or a civil unrest zone. So what he's doing is he's enhancing the stand your ground laws in Florida. Now, I can tell you that I can see some problems in regards to that. But
definitely.
Yeah, but here's what it shows. People are scared.
Well,
and,
sure.
and they know that the police aren't going to be there in time to help them with their problems. And here's a great example. I've been contacted numerous times by representatives, not political representatives, but business representatives of the city of Santa Monica. And they, when the Black Lives Matter people rioted and the Antifa people rioted in Santa Monica earlier this year, they came in and destroyed all the businesses that are on the famous Santa Monica Pier. And there was no law enforcement response. As a matter of fact, the allegations against the city is that the mayor or the chief of police or both of them told the officers to stand down and not even respond.
So here's what happens from that. All of the business people lose their businesses, they're damaged, they're looted. The insurance companies have to pay. Everybody's insurance rate goes up, not just the person who got looted and burned. And then the business owners sue the city, so the city's out the money, then the taxes go up. I mean, does anybody just not see how all these little dominoes fall into place when something like this happens, when we don't have law and order in our country? There are so many repercussions and unthought of consequences that people are just looking past until we're going to be in the midst of it, and then we're going to be in big trouble. Just for an example, Ron, in those pardons that Governor Newsom did for this year alone, there was drug possessions, burglaries, and varying degrees of manslaughter. Since he became governor, actually since 2019, he's had 63 pardons, 78 commutations, and 4 reprieves. The justice system cannot work if it goes through the whole process. And by the way, we spend a lot of money both capturing these people and then prosecuting these people, putting them in prison, only to have a governor come and decide that everything that happened was not what he wanted, so he, you know, lets them out. Then you have the public who is re-endangered, and this is like we're on a little merry-go-round here that never stops. We can't get the bad people off the street. And there was just very recently a police officer shot and killed in Houston that was killed by a 24-year-old guy who was one of those people who had been let out for prior felonies. He should have been in jail, and that officer should be home with his 4 kids.
Well, one of the problems that we're seeing, at least people like you and I see, and people with common sense see, I don't know what the progressive sees, left sees at all. As a matter of fact, I think they're either intentionally blinded or they're deliberately blinded by their own leaders and the mainstream media, who's very complicit with this. But the problem that we're seeing is this judicial activism and this prosecutorial activism. And a couple of great examples is just what you're talking about. These people are committing serious felonies. And now he's killed the police officer. If you take a look at the rising crime rates, the rising shooting rates and homicide rates at, I recently wrote an article about this, 6 of the major cities. So if you take a look at New York City, if you take a look at Detroit, if you take a look at Los Angeles, California, if you take a look at St. Louis, Missouri, if you take a look at Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you will see, and Chicago, my God, Chicago, you will see just double-digit homicide rates increasing compared to last year. When you break that down and you look at the suspects that have been arrested for these shooting homicides, we see without exception that these people have been through the criminal justice system time and time again for progressively more violent felonies. And now they've resulted in murders. And who's to blame for that?
Well, our legislators are to blame for that. Our judges are to blame for that. And guess what? So are we, the electorate. We are voting in these type of people. We have an uninformed electorate in a lot of ways. Okay, there's a lot of people who understand voting, who take the time to really read and to understand who they're voting for. But these people could not be in these positions if we, the people, had not voted them in. And when Joe Biden says that he wants to bring the country together, his very first acts before he's even the president, proclaimed the president, are divisive. He's already talking with Black Lives Matter. He's already looking at trillions of dollars of tax increases for us. There is such a divide in this country that I just don't see how we're going to get out of it. And I don't see that Joe Biden, everything that I saw him say on the stump to me went out the window the minute he thought he won. And he's going with a very progressive team, a team that, you know, you and I were just having a conversation about this person that he is bringing on to handle COVID. And that person thinks that vaccines should go to the world before they go to America. Listen, there are over 30 companies, and they're worldwide companies, that are working on a fascinating group of vaccines. And the vaccines, I read about every single one of them. It's very interesting that they work in all different ways. So they attack the virus in different ways. And I thought that was really fascinating. But the one in our country that is the furthest ahead is Pfizer. And Pfizer could have vaccines out before the end of the year. And this guy thinks that we should give them to the world. There are also vaccine makers in Brazil and in India and in many other countries. They can do their own vaccines over there. But we paid the money. We in America paid the money. I think it was $10 billion that President Trump allocated to that
warp speed.
Warp speed. I always forget. I always want to say hurricane. Warp speed to get this done. And we get it done. And he wants to give it to somebody else. I'm just so opposed to that. This administration, should it actually come to pass, scares me to pieces.
Well, you can tell right away, and I think you made a really good comment, you can tell right away that the President Biden and the people that he's going to bring into his administration are what we refer to as globalists. What does that mean? To us, globalists refer to people that care more about the interests of the world and developing countries than they do about the United States of America, where President Trump is the antithesis of a globalist. He is America first president, and he does care about the developing nations and Europe and Asia and our allies and everything like that. But he says, look, none of that stuff can happen because we are the most powerful nation in the world. None of that stuff can happen unless America is first stable. And that means economically stable, that means medically stable, that means our people are stable, our, you know, everything. All of that has to be stable, you know, vise on stability. And our economic stability and our national security are, of course, intertwined with our ability to be around and not be sick or dead from COVID. So, of course, you see where the priority should be, but globalists just don't see that.
No, they don't see that. And like I said, this possible administration scares me. There still are a lot of challenges to the election that President Trump is mounting with his legal team. And we still have to wait and see what's actually going to happen. I've told you, and I still believe in my heart, that President Trump won the election. I believe it was stolen by more than one way. There was, you know, multiple efforts and different ways to falsify ballots and to change dates, and all of that is on record. So we're going to see where this goes, and I'm praying that it goes President Trump's way, but if not, we're going to have a lot to be dealing with.
Well, I want to talk with you about what the potential future again is going to be with a Biden and Harris administration, but let's grab that first cup of coffee.
Fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutloud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault. I'm to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DrRonMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice. You know, we've been talking about reimagining law enforcement, but I kind of wanted to get into reimagining what the United States of America is going to look like and reimagining what the next presidential administration is going to look like if President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence lose this election.
Well, it's a reimagination that I don't want to do, but I guess we have to talk about it. One of the guys that Joe Biden is looking at for his new chief of staff, Ronald Klain, you know, we talk about elections that are rigged, and in 2014, he's a guy that tweeted out that our elections are rigged. So how does he, you know, square that with what's going on now when he's saying that the elections are not rigged?
Oh, God, that's easy, Linda, because it was rigged in their favor.
Of course.
And now he's going to be, you know, the potential, you know, chief of staff of the president of the United States. You know, let's take a look at who is sort of vying for cabinet positions. And it's people that are all well known because they were, you know, candidates for the presidency, and they lost to Joe Biden. So one of the people is Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
So, you know, Bernie Sanders, and getting around it. I mean, you can't deny it. He's an avowed socialist. I mean, he admits that he's a progressive socialist. And if you remember him, I think he spent, when he got married, he spent his honeymoon in Moscow with his wife. So, I mean, so that ought to tell you something. But what does he want to do? He wants to be the labor secretary. So because he has such an interest in people's, you know, families and their welfare. But if you go back, it is the socialist Marxist rhetoric. It's always about what?
Unions, for one.
Well, yeah, it's always about labor, okay? So not necessarily unions, but it's about labor organizations, because I don't think they allow unions in this, you know, in the Soviet Union. Do they allow unions there?
I don't think so.
It's called the Communist Workers' Party for a reason, okay? And so it's about the people. But you and I both know, and anybody that understands their international history, and of course they don't even teach international relations and international history in high school or maybe even college unless it's a degree program, but it's always the workers that get the leaders into place, but then after that the leaders become the ruling elite and the workers are standing in bread lines with in front of stores with empty store shelves. And so Bernie Sanders wants to be the Secretary of Labor. What do you think labor will look like under a Sanders leadership?
Well, the whole point of what Sanders believes in, like you say, is socialistic, communistic. So it would look like, let's just think about what it looks like in Russia. Let's think about what it looks like in China. Basically, I see the workers as being little drones that do what they're told to do. They are definitely unionized. Joe Biden is big on unions. Bernie Sanders is big on unions. This way they control the people. They collect money and dues from the people, which is a big deal for them.
Because it keeps the Democratic organization going.
Yes. And so the people, no longer will there be that entrepreneurial spirit. No longer will it be that the best person for the job gets the job. No longer will it be that if you don't do your job properly, you get fired, because now you're going to have the same kind of protections that, you know, teachers have, which is crazy, crazy protection. You can be a government employee in our country and do the worst job and have the worst behavior and nothing will happen to you. And we are still paying for those people. So just think about your life with all incentive and motivation to succeed taken out of it, and that if you are a person who's entrepreneurial and you are a person who starts a business, they will come into your business and try to unionize your business that you spent the money on, that you put the blood, sweat, and tears in, and your time to build that business, and the employees will basically own that business with you. This will kill our capitalist society here.
Well, you know, here's something that I read about quite some time ago. Okay, so the wall goes down under Michael Gorbachev when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States. And so now that the wall is down, people can freely, you know, travel through Germany, right? Because don't forget, the wall divided East Berlin from West Berlin. So now the wall goes down, and the people in West Berlin are needing workers. So the East Berlin, which was under the communist structure, you know, for what, 40 years preceding, ever since World War II, at that time, to 1989, so about 40 years under the communist regime, and exactly what you're talking about, Linda, you know, that type of mentality, that type of worker mentality, and that type of worker structure, they start coming into West Berlin and other parts of Germany to work. And the West Berliners, who grew up under a capitalist structure, they're going, who are these guys? These are the worst workers we've ever seen in our lives. You know, they want to take breaks all the time. Their work product is terrible. And it was a big culture shock to reintegrate the communist Germans with the free Germans. So I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, I would go in completely the opposite direction. Were I the president or the labor secretary, I would go in completely the opposite direction.
By the way, that would make me the first husband.
That's right. I would not have labor unions at all. And the same thing in government, I would not. It's got to be that the best people get to keep their jobs. We've talked about this a lot of times with just human nature, just human beings. They want the ability to reap the rewards from what their efforts are. It's not that they don't want other people to reap the rewards, but they want to reap the rewards. And by doing so, other people are also rewarded. That's how it should work. And it shouldn't work that the government tells you what to do and how to do it, and it takes money from you for their organizations. This is just the worst possible scenario.
So socialism, communism, Marxism, all sort of the same thing.
Yes.
In various degrees, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, socialism is communism light. Okay, socialism
okay.
is communism light. Okay, but it's not free. It's not a free society. But the word that continually comes up, and I heard this from Kamala Harris's mouth, continually. I heard it from Bernie Sanders. I heard it from Elizabeth Warren. And AOC, Tlaib, all these people throughout the election and continuing, because this is what they believe. And the word is equity. Things have to be equitable. Things are not equitable. And what they're referring to is no matter what your education, what your training, what your experience is, how hard you work at your job, as opposed to you don't work, you don't have education, you don't have job skills. Under a socialist Marxist system, that doesn't matter because we want everybody to be equal.
Except for Bernie Sanders, because Bernie, when that was brought up to Bernie and they said, why don't you give some of your millions and millions of dollars?
And remember, he wrote a book and he made millions off his book.
Yes. Why don't you give that to other people so that you are income equal? And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. Or Bernie, why don't you offer to pay more taxes out of your money since you believe in much higher taxing of people?
Or give some of your money away to help those people that you say you care about.
And he said no. This is where kind of the rubber meets the road. And you see that these people are not interested in us. They are interested in their wealth. And they're interested in all of us not having wealth. That way, we are kept under their thumb, and we become those little robots, little drones, working for however they want us to work. I can't imagine the misery of American people who are an entrepreneurial group of people, a capitalist group of people. And don't forget, Ron, that over 70 million people voted for President Trump. And those people are not going to go easily into this kind of life. There will be a revolution of some sort if Biden goes this far to the left. And in that same strain, Elizabeth Warren, another very, very progressive, socialistic type person. Has anybody ever heard the word Venezuela? Do we pay attention to history that there is no socialist country that's ever worked? Why would you want to take the greatest country
working
on the face
economic
of the
model
yes on the face of the earth and change it to a non-working model? Why would you do that?
Okay, and so let's talk about that's a great segue into Elizabeth Warren, because she has been talked about and has mentioned it herself about being the new Secretary of the Treasury.
Yes.
Okay, so that kind of surprised me a little bit about that position, but look at how critical that position is, being involved in the Treasury, which is the economic bank of the United States. It is the, I'm not going to say it's the heart and soul, but it's the financial heart and soul of America. That's where all the money goes. Okay,
right.
So when people are paying their taxes, you know, all these revenue streaming sources go into what? The Treasury Department. And so just think about what a Treasury Department secretary like Elizabeth Warren, think about the impact that she could have on our economic engine.
Well, I think about everybody in a Biden administration that will have that impact on our economic engine. And we have already taken such a huge hit in this country with COVID. I look at people like Disney. Disney, who has not been able to open in California since last March.
And, you know, we have a friend that works for Disney, and there are, and it might even be more now, Linda, but they laid off 38,000 people.
I think it was more than that, actually. And so these people are still laid off after all this time, and Newsom will not reopen Disneyland until the COVID numbers are under, I think, 1%?
Wow. And that's
on
huge.
The testing.
And so, you know, our friend works in Anaheim, right? She's laid off right now, but she had worked for, I don't know, many years for Disney Corporation at Disneyland in Anaheim. And so, you know, our businesses in California, you could drive to Disneyland in 15 minutes. And so and we're in Anaheim often. Look at all the support businesses around Disneyland. You know, let's talk about some of that. Let's talk about the hotels, the restaurants, the rental cars, Orange County Airport, which used to be called John Wayne Airport until it became politically incorrect.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, let's talk about you as a businesswoman. Let's talk about how that impacts that infrastructure when a major corporation like Disney is forced to shut down.
Well, it's in so many ways. It's just too many to count. But all those businesses, like you mentioned, all the infrastructure, first of all of the people that are laid off and that are getting unemployment. I don't know how much longer California can pay unemployment. And by the way, they're not paying it very well, because I'm hearing from people over and over that they're not getting their unemployment checks and they don't know how they're going to live from day to day. Secondly, you have all of these businesses, and Disney is just one little place that, I mean, California has basically been shut down and still is. Most people are still working out of their houses from corporations rather than out of their offices. And I think that that's going to permanently change the face of business all over the country. I think that companies have found that, hey, they don't need these buildings and they don't need all this overhead and they can have people work from home. But then you take just in Anaheim as a microcosm type situation, you take all those companies where people, the restaurants are going out of business, the hotels right there, right next to Disneyland, the hotels are extremely slow. There are people staying at the hotels, and the hotels are open, but they're extremely slow. So all of the things that, let's just take a hotel, all the things that they buy napkins and coasters.
I'm glad you're going there, okay, because I call that. I'm so glad you're going there because you beat me to it.
Well, they buy it from me.
I know, okay, so that's what I wanted to talk about. I refer to that. This is just Dr. Ron speaking. I mean, I refer to that as the substructure, the invisible substructure of economy that people never see, but you live in that substructure.
Yes.
So go ahead and talk about that.
I mean, we supply those hotels with things like their napkins and coasters and items that they use for their rooms and their printed items and, you know, all sorts of different things that they use in food and beverage
and
housekeeping.
Bags.
Sure.
Yeah.
So those things are hurting businesses like mine, and there's lots of businesses like mine. And also, you look at the people that do their laundry and people that supply their beverages and people that just so many. I mean, people that supply so many services to a resort. And we're just talking a resort and multiply that by
Tens of thousands.
All over the country.
Tens of thousands.
So they are very, very. And I have resorts that have not paid us ever since COVID started. They shut them down and they said, we're not paying anybody until such time as we reopen. Well, I don't know when that will be. So people like me are sitting out there having put the money out for their product.
And you have products warehoused and you can't do anything with them because they're not open and they can't sell those products.
They can't use the products.
Right? You know, and let me ask you something else in that vein. And I like this conversation. And I have to tell you that I'm really happy that I'm talking with you as my partner because, I mean, you're like the expert. But so when these companies, these resorts and these places like that, Linda, they're losing money, but they need to still offer a product, something. Does that force them to go externally to like China, Indonesia, India, to buy those products, or can they still buy American-made products? But let's do that when we come back from our next cup of coffee.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Anyway, I walked over to go get some coffee for us. You know, I had a question on the table about how does that impact? Are all these problems that we're suffering right now, corporate problems that we're suffering, is that going to cause those corporations, those resorts, you know, places like Disney to outsource and to go to places like, increasingly go to places like China, our enemy, and Indonesia and you know, places like that and India for products? Are they going to continue to buy American?
Well, I have to be honest, they don't even necessarily try to buy American. They try to get the best price. And when you buy overseas, it's all about the quantity in order to get the price. So you can probably buy lesser quantities in the United States, but there are things that are not necessarily made in the United States that they get, and also things that are not made in the United States that are financially profitable for them to get. In other words, it's better for them to get overseas. But during President Trump's administration, one of the wonderful things that he did, and you and I've talked about it many times, is he kind of put that stranglehold on China. And he started with the tariffs, and he was criticized widely. That was one of the best things he ever could have done, because he brought prices, not just prices in line, people like us.
He sort of leveled the playing field.
We went to other countries than China, because China now had these big tariffs, and we started looking around, seeing who else could make things.
Vietnam,
South Korea, right. India, lots of different places can make other things that China makes. So the world started looking around, and they found other suppliers that are faster, cheaper, and have less of a freight situation.
With a little bit better customer service, I think you were talking about as well.
Well, at times, yeah.
Yeah.
At times. There certainly are middlemen that work with China that are very, very good. But during the pandemic, it's been very hard to get anything out of China.
And you broke internationally, don't you? I mean, you're all over the place.
Yes. So President Trump, people that are not in business and use these services, which are everywhere you look every day, but the average person doesn't know where things come from. They just use it. They just use that napkin, and they just use that coaster, or they just use whatever the product is, and they don't know where it comes from, and nobody cares.
No, they see a t-shirt, they like it, they don't care
Sure.
where it's made from.
Exactly. So what it makes a big difference, though, in the industry where you get things from, and that is a gift that President Trump gave to America that America does not appreciate in the way that they should, because they don't understand.
Let me ask you this. This is getting to be a Linda interview, but I think this is a great time to do that. But okay, so Lynn, so President Trump, one of the things that I liked about what President Trump did is he said, hey, there's way too many American corporations that moved offshore.
Yes.
Because of the tax, you know, the heavy taxes that had been laid upon them in previous administrations, even Republican administrations. And so he changed that, and he made it easier, lessened the tax burden, and those companies came back to America, and now they had sweat equity and sweat investments into the United States. So now Elizabeth Warren, let's just do a hypothetical. Elizabeth Warren is picked as Treasury Secretary, which controls the IRS, which, and they're talking
no,
about...
that's scary.
And it talks about taxes. And you and I have seen a projected, tax formula for Biden, you know, taxing the rich.
Yes.
And taxing the corporations. Do you think that that's going to scare the hell out of the corporations? And by the way, 12 states during this election have voted to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour, like Florida being one of them, like California, one of them, I think New York, another one. These are all major labor, you know, pockets. And so do you think that with the new tax structure coming in, do you think that all the gains that were made by President Trump to bring companies, American companies, back into the United States, we're going to see another exodus out of the United States?
Yes. Yes. President Trump had the best economy in the history of America. More people made more money, more wages and salary. They were higher under him in his first 3 years. Okay. He did more than Obama Biden did in their 8 years, in his first 3 years. He was just rocking the economic engine of America like nobody. And we had very, very anemic growth under the Biden and Obama administration. How people could take this engine that was working so well, and by the way, just look at our GDP for our third quarter of this year. I mean, it's the highest it has ever been in a quarter. So then you vote to change that? I mean, what do you expect is going to happen? I can tell you what's going to happen is that we are going to backpedal to not a great place. We are not going to have the economic engine working like it was. Companies are going to hold on to their money. You've got this double whammy with COVID and with Biden and taxes. And then you're going to have these higher wages and people are going to have to start laying off. In addition to the laying off that they're already doing because of COVID, and interest rates are going to go up. So if you want to refinance your house, do it tomorrow.
Well, you know what? this whole COVID has changed the paradigm of the United States and our economic engine, as everybody understands. But one of the problems that's happening, and this is a problem with lawmakers, is that they've created such an incentive for these low-tier workers to stay home.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that is part of the socialistic 8 rules by Saul Alinsky. That is exactly, when you make people dependent on the government, then you are a step further towards socialism. I am so frustrated that America does not see this. President Trump should have won by a 40-state landslide. He should have. And they played this game with the riots and the social discontent. This wasn't some accident that just happened to happen in our country. This was planted in order to do exactly what they did. Why would a Biden-Harris administration come in and get rid of all of the gains that President Trump has made for Americans? Why would they do that?
Well,
we are reversing direction so fast and so furious, another Democratic debacle, fast and furious, that, I mean, this country's going to be in a tailspin.
Well, so, okay, so here's the way I look at this. So, okay, you kind of threw out a little bit of it was more of a rhetorical question, but I think I'm going to respond to it. And so what I see is that the two major things, and I'm sure there are more, but in my mind, the two major things that put us in this position today, where instead of winning by a landslide, President Trump is basically on the ropes right now. We're trying to figure out what the hell's going to happen in the Senate, too. Number one, their all-out hatred and the war against President Trump. I mean, they hate this guy. They just don't dislike him. They hate him. And they hate everything associated with him. Then, and that goes along with the complicit media, Black Lives Matter, the new progressives, you know, the squad, all of Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, you know, all of those people. That's the one issue. The next issue, which I think is huge in this election, and I've just got two words for that, and that is free stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Free stuff.
Yes.
And so when you take a look at what Biden has put out there, or what Harris has put out there, and what the Democratic candidates put out there, is we are going to remove the school burden, okay, the school bill, your bills for going to university, your bills for going to college, your debt. Okay, so we're going to absolve you of your debt, which could cost tens, just that could cost tens of trillions of dollars.
And why do you think they want to do that? So people can go to college and get educated and get a good career, because it's not going to really matter under their socialistic type of government, or so that you can send them to college so that you can indoctrinate them into your socialistic type of society.
So just like in the Soviet Union, just like in Venezuela, and I want to talk about our Uber driver that you remember, okay, when we were out in Orlando, Florida many months ago. But anyway, so you get all of these people and they've got high degrees. They've got, there's a lot of PhDs out there. So if you go into these, countries, like you go to Russia, there's a lot of PhDs, right? There's MDs, there's PhDs. You go to Venezuela, there's doctors, there's lawyers, there's PhDs out there. And what are they doing? They can't get good work. They're working menial jobs. And so, you know, you get the free education from the state, but, and then you get a job, but now, because everything has sort of collapsed economically, they can't afford to, you work in a hospital, you end up making, you know, the same kind of money that a cab driver's making.
Exactly.
You know, so where's the incentive? You've gotten all this education that has been paid by the state, and then you come out and either can't find work, or the money that you get paid for the high education and the job skills that you obtained, you're not getting paid any more than a cab driver, because there is equity, right? Everybody needs to be equal. It's horrible.
You know, President Trump's legacy is going to be that he proved that free market policies are the surest path to prosperity. He has abundantly proved the thought that our society, the way it was originally intended, works. And when you come in as a Biden-Harris, and you want to reverse all of those things that he did, because Biden has already said he's going to reverse most of what President Trump did. He's going back into the Paris deal.
He's the Paris Climate Accord.
Even looking at the Iran deal that he made.
The Iran nuclear deal.
Oh my gosh. One of the worst deals ever made in history. If you reverse everything that President Trump did, do you think the economy is not going to reverse? I mean, what, how do you even look at this picture and say that this makes sense?
Again, I go back to my theme. Number one, the hatred for Trump. People look, you know my comment all the time. My saying is, people tend to look at things emotionally and not forensically. Meaning, what do I mean by forensically? They don't investigate. They don't think things out. They go with their emotions. They go with their glands. And they don't go with common sense. They don't do the investigation. They listen to CNN. They listen to MSNBC. They look at social media like Facebook, and they get, you know, their impressions of what's going on from that source. And they don't think things out. They don't look, you know, you and I mean, anybody with common sense, and you just brought it up, we look at the models. Okay, so Bernie Sanders says, we like that socialist model. We like that Marxist model. He doesn't call it that, but he's a socialist. We like that socialist model. Okay, fine. How's that working for you? So if you and I would say, okay, well, let's take a look at that. All right, let's take a look at Venezuela. Let's take a look at the old Soviet Union, for God's sakes. Let's take a look at what's happening in North Korea. Let's take a look at any country that has a socialist. Look at Colombia, for God's sakes, and look at how Colombia changed. Okay, Colombia was in the socialist model. They're not there anymore. And in Central America, in just a few short years after leaving the socialist model, they're probably the leader in Central America now.
President Trump's economic strategy has totally been vindicated by actual real-world results. And anybody can see that. And when you talk about that people hated President Trump so much, they hated President Trump because they heard it on the news to do so, because they heard it from actors and actresses to do so. The everyday American, I don't think, hated President Trump. And we all benefited by having him as our president. To walk into the White House and say that you're going to undo everything that he did and go back to your losing strategy, and not even go, just go back to your losing strategy, but expand on your losing strategy, is, that is the definition to me of insanity.
So I like what you're saying. And I think what you're also saying is, look, under the Biden administration, we had a demonstrated, for 8 years, a demonstrated losing business model. And the American people voted against President Trump with their dislike or their hatred for President Trump. And they voted for Biden over policies that created a demonstratedly successful, highly successful business model. And now they want to return to the Biden and Obama administration business model and expand it.
Yes. Yeah, this is the definition of insanity. What our country was thinking, I don't know. And even if President Trump comes out as the winner, to have as many people vote for Biden-Harris,
half the country,
scares me. And that's why I personally don't think that we will ever come back together again as a country. And I think that this was predicted in history and predictable. And I don't know what the answer is. There's really a lot of talking, a lot of thinking to be done here. And what all we can do is pray that we keep the senators in Georgia, in the Georgia, upcoming Georgia election, which, you know, the Democrats are telling people to move to Georgia now so that they can vote against them. Isn't that just another form of cheating? Their governor in Georgia said that will not be put up with. I don't know how they can prevent it. But isn't that just another way of people trying to cheat? And I'm sick to death of the cheating in this country.
Well, sure. But, you know, let me just put it in a different light. First of all, there's nothing illegal about moving from one state to another, okay?
Oh, yes, there is. It's a felony to move from one state to another, according to the governor, just to vote for somebody else and then go back.
Oh, okay. Now, under those circumstances, if that's what you're talking about, yes. All right, but don't forget that we escaped Calisuela to come out to Texas so that we could live in a freer society.
But we live here.
We've lived here for years now. But I agree with that. But I absolutely agree, because I wrote an article about it, about how the United States is going to divide up. There is not going to be any unity in the United States, no matter who becomes president of the United States. When you have literally half of the voting people voting against President Trump and voting against President Trump's wonderful policies, and the other, you know, camp, one half of the country, in favor of President Trump, or at least if they sort of disagree with President Trump, at least they're not stupid and they're voting for the policies. This country is, and the way that both sides are going, and especially the progressive Democrats, which is what I want to talk about, you know, in another time, this country will remain divided.